So this instruction is melodic line. So what is a melodic line? Or, say it another way, what is melody? Well, it's a repeated set of notes that show up throughout a piece of music. It's a recognizable musical phrase that happens again and again throughout a song or a piece of music that sort of holds it together, right? The repetition of this melodic line is what makes that piece of music that piece of music. When you hear it, you immediately, you don't, just that phrase, you immediately remember the entire song. So I've got two quick examples that bring some joy to me personally. There's a song called The Superman March. John Williams wrote it for the 1978 Superman movie with Christopher Reeves. I was 10 years old and went to that movie. And I remember that famous melodic line from the song to this day. Does anybody know it? Ba, 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 right? That's the Superman march. And it has been used in every Superman movie save one, I hear, since then. And depending on what's happening in the movie, the melody comes up again and again, but it's presented in different ways. So at the very beginning, when the title screens are coming up and that famous red logo for Superman's chest comes on, and then it sort of morphs into the movie's title, you hear that, but it's soaring. It's heroic, and it's meant to be. And that same phrasing comes up again whenever people are in trouble, and oh no, here comes Superman flying to save the day. But then we get it in some other scenes in the movie, and it comes to us in different ways. Whenever there's like this, like a love scene with Lois Lane, it's a little bit different arrangement, and it's softened, but it's still recognizable as the Superman march. And as I said, the melody or melodic line can come up again with variations, purposefully, so that this scene adds something new to the storyline. Another quick example, much less known. I played the cello in high school, and we played we had this one particular song that our teacher gave us called "The Russian Sailor's Dance." And if you know anything about orchestra, the cello never gets the melody line. It's just sort of the heartbeat of the orchestra. It's always the violins, those people that get the melody to play, you know? But not the Russian Sailor's Dance. What's cool about that song is the cellos get the melody first. And then it kind of dances throughout the orchestra. Then it goes to the horns, and then it goes to the violas, and then finally makes it away to around to the violins. But each time that melody comes up, it's a little different. There's some more notes perhaps added instead of like a whole note. Maybe there's like four notes doing that same musical note, but different. And so you get these different tones and different ways in which these instruments will play that melodic line, and it's purposeful. It's not disjointed. It's not, you know, six different songs happening. It connects together. So there's this thread that's running through that sort of holds it all together. Again, anytime you hear it, you know that that's that song. And that's the idea of this melodic line. Without it, different movements in a symphony or even, you know, songs in a movie would have no connection. There'd be no logic. There'd be no cohesive story that's being told. And that's the beauty of this tool of trying to find the melodic line in a book of Scripture, because that's the metaphor, right? We're looking for that phrasing, those notes, where we can say, essentially, not musical notes, but now ideas, right? Where we can look at a book and say, that's what makes that book that book. Now, that melodic line is going to show up different ways in different texts, but it's always going to be that it's always going to be distinguishable. Sometimes even because of something that's absent, perhaps. Okay, so are we're up. Okay, good. Because I was looking for one more opportunity to do a little drawing for you. So here's our picture. You'd think, having played the cello, I'd have some idea of how to draw this, but okay, so that's nice. Maybe, you know, I was a cello player, so I had a bass clef. Okay, so here's the principle. Just as every song has a unique melody, every book of the Bible has a unique message. And that's what we're going to try to work together to figure out for Exodus. So why do we do this? We will handle a specific text better if we understand what the whole book's about. You know that, right? That's why we shy away from certain books. I don't know what's going on in this big, hairy book of Isaiah. I don't want to dive into this thing because I don't know what's going on largely throughout the book, right? So, but that's the idea. So if we get a handle on the melodic line of a book, we'll feel more comfortable as we march through that book text by text. Laying hold of the melodic line of a book helps us to understand how a specific text illustrates or contributes to or is shaped by the melodic line. In other words, that text might show us a development in that melodic line. It might take away a few of the notes so that we appreciate one part of the melodic line. And so on. Every text will, in some way, be related to this melody. That's the point. It may be related directly or indirectly as support for or even given in contrast to the melodic line. This realization is also based upon our conviction that the Bible is God's word to man. This is a cohesive book that God has given to us. His life-giving message to sinners about salvation in his Son, and what does this book have to offer for us in that great mission that God has given to us, the revelation of himself. So books of the Bible then come to us in rational discourse. They're not strings of unrelated speeches or stories, but they're advancing a message that's organized and unified. The parts relate to each other, in other words. They do so by way of this melodic line. So the implication then is that the best teachers are going to be the best listeners for that melodic line, right? So we want to be looking for that melodic line in a book so that we can be better teachers of these texts as we walk our way through it. This helps to avoid some of the pitfalls that Jeremy talked about at the beginning. It, for instance, prevents us from being impressionistic preachers that simply just read a passage and go, oh, I have an impression about that. I have a feeling about, I think I'm just going to preach on this, and it may be unrelated to actually what the argument of that text is, and even foreign to the melodic line. And so this helps us. I mean, isn't the reason why a lot of us stay away from some books is because we don't know what the melodic line is? I mean, we might not have phrased it that way, right? I mean, the major prophets. I mean, isn't it just easier to do 1 Peter? You know? But this tool, I hope, this tool helps us in all the books, but I think it also opens up some of these bigger books for us. Okay, so there's a number of strategies that you can use to use this tool of melodic line, to lay hold of the melodic line. I mean, first of all, there's no substitute for just reading and rereading a text. We've encountered that strategy kind of along the way, right? Sometimes there's a purpose statement in a book, like the famous one in John 20 and verse 31, or perhaps 1 John 5:13. Sometimes the author just comes out and says, kind of, this is why I'm writing this book, right? Not one in Exodus, of course. So let's use it. Let's get right to work here and do some examples in Exodus, because we've, you know, let's sort of lean into all this work that we've been doing in the book. So get with a partner. We want to first use the strategy of top and tail, looking at the beginning and end of a book. And so I specifically want, I'm going to try to limit you to some verses. So at the beginning of the book, we want to look at chapter 1 and verses 7 through 14. And at the end, we want to look at chapter 40 and verses 34 through 38. Okay, this is what you're looking for. When you compare the top and the tail, you're looking for either points of comparison or points of contrast. Okay? So with that, I'm going to leave it right there. So you're looking for some points of comparison and points of contrast. Okay? Think about big categories, people, what's going on, you know, their situation, all those sorts of things, or even words that might relate to each other. So take just a couple minutes and read those texts and see if you can come up with points of either comparison or contrast. Okay, it's quieting down a little bit. That must mean we're ready. What did you brothers find by way of comparison or contrast looking at the beginning of the book to the end of the book? Once again, this is the audience participation portion of the program.
Contrast, they worked as slaves, but now they serve as free people.
Okay. So, slaves to free. You also, I mean, related to that, you mentioned the idea of work. Maybe there's something there. What? How might you see comparison or contrast at the end related to that?
Worship.
Okay, so you've got, so if you think of work as like this idea of service, right? A different kind of a service, right? So related. Okay, what else do we have?
Filling in both passages.
Okay, where'd you see that? Can you give us a little help?
Well, the land is filled with them, and then Pharaoh's making them build store cities.
Okay.
There seems to be this idea of fill up my stuff. Mm-hmm. The filling works great for me in the end.
And how does it work in the end?
The glory of the Lord fills.
Okay. So where do you, can you give me some verse numbers just so guys make sure they're following you?
Yeah, so verse 7, the land is filled.
Yeah, with what?
With the people.
Okay, yep.
With the people of Israel. And then this one's sort of a guess, but verse 11 is the store cities.
Okay.
And then chapter 40, verse 34, the glory of the Lord fills the tabernacle.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've got a different kind of filling, but they're not unrelated to each other, right? Okay, what else did you see?
This is kind of, I think, a slave free thing, but if they start out as Pharaoh's people,
yeah.
And end as the Lord's people.
Yep, that's right. So you've got Pharaoh over them, and you see God over them. You know, God has just given commands, right? And they did just as he commanded, is right before this text, right? and, of course, there's some harsh commands. By Pharaoh, so you got that comparison. That's good. What else you got?
So, one comparison, they're both sojourners at the beginning and the end, even though they're in different places. So, oh. One, they're in the land of Egypt, and
okay.
The next are wandering.
Okay. Is there, so how did you find that in the text? You've got something that you're grounding that in? Or just...
Well, in the end, it's clear that the Lord is taking them up and guiding them through the wilderness.
Okay.
But, I mean, I guess context would tell us in the first part that Egypt is not their final home. So,
okay.
Metaphorically sojourners.
Yeah. Yeah. So we want to be thinking through all of these things because we can't ground it in the text. Maybe, you know, I'd keep playing around with that if I could find something to ground it in. But that's good. That's good. Anything else you guys found?
Movement. So they're in one place at the beginning. Pharaoh's intentionally keeping them there. And at the end, they're moving led.
Okay. So, yeah. So they're, it might relate to this slave thing, right? This idea of being static, and now there's this movement. They're going somewhere. They're moving away from this foreign land, and they're moving towards the promised land, right? That's good. Did you have something in the back, or did you cut?
Yeah, in verse 12, as they're multiplying, filling the earth, the people of Egypt are in dread of them. And then the word dread isn't used, but verse 35 at the end, Moses was not able to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled on it, and knowing what happens in Exodus with the cloud and the glory, that's also due to fear, dread of the presence of the Lord.
That's interesting. So you've got that idea. Give me those
fear
verses.
Fear has moved from the people to God himself.
Yeah, give me those verses again.
Verse 12, chapter 1 and verse 35.
40-35, is that what you said? Go ahead and read those. Just
yeah. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel. In the end, Moses was not able to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled on it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle.
Okay. All right. So what we want to do is we want to think of these as different notes that we've noticed, right? That's a musical note, if you can't discern that. Okay. All right, so let's... have we laid hold of the melodic line at this point?
No,
but we're moving towards that, right? Top and tail's not designed to get you the melodic line. It's one of the strategies that you're using in order to sort of collect these notes, as it were. Sometimes, you know, one of these notes might not pan out. You know, we're going to use some other strategies, and you're going to be like, maybe this dread thing isn't something. Or maybe it is. Like, we've got to verify. We've got to do a little bit more work. So along with reading and rereading the book, of course, as we're doing this, looking for these repeated themes and ideas, these are some strategies that we're going to use. But I just want to move to this other one quickly. This idea of macro structure. Or how the whole book is structured. I just want to give this to you, and I want to give you a minute to think about this. So if you think of the book, chapters 1 through 18, maybe with this idea of deliverance, you know, and in that you're thinking foreign land, harsh service, foreign king. That's what they're being delivered from, right? And then maybe look at that second section, 19 to 34, as something like demands or requirements of covenant people, something like that. And then finally, chapters 35 to 40, as dwelling, and here we've got this idea of a holy people, right, already delivered, free, living with, serving their covenant king. So if you look at this idea, right, how does looking at the macro structure, looking at this sort of movement, how does that help us with what we've already seen in top and tail? In other words, is there any relationship between some of these ideas that we saw looking just at the beginning and end and now considering, like, the movement of the book? Any ideas there?
Maybe that top and tail is showing us the specifics and details in the macro structure.
Okay. All right. Yep.
In the book of Israel, in the book of Exodus, you're seeing God move the people of Israel from just a family of 70, and he organizes them. slaves, these subjects of Pharaoh, and he organizes and strengthens them into a people.
Yeah. I mean, that was a lot of words, but I think you're right. I think what we're looking for is top and tail kind of gets you beginning and end, right? And if you look at the structure kind of helps you see how you got from the beginning to the end. And you were giving us examples of that, right? So so you want to just consider this movement of, you know, deliverance to dwelling, right? And how God made that happen in the book. Again, just another strategy so that we're not only looking at the notes at the beginning and end and not thinking about how they're related to each other. The structure helps you think in terms of how they got there, you know, how that movement was made. The biggest thing I wanted us to spend time on is this idea of repeated themes. What I'm going to do, we're going to have some real time to do some work here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to list some suggested larger themes in the book. And what I want you to do is think about the texts that you've studied in preparation for coming here. If you want to, you could also consider texts that have been used as illustrations in the instructions. You know, you've been in like Exodus 13, like, you know, 115 times with Jeremy, right? You could think about a text that's been preached on, you know, etc. Or just a text you're familiar with that you read that hasn't been covered. So I just want you to think about specific texts and come up with some examples of these big themes. Okay? So I'm going to write them up here first. So this idea of glory, holiness, covenant, and I'm combining this last category of dwelling and worship. Okay? So this is what I want you to do. We want to do two things in this. Okay? You're going to get with your neighbor and you're going to talk this out. Okay? And I'm going to give you 10 minutes to do it. Okay? Because I want you to really do a little bit of work. Keep in mind, the melodic line you cannot lay a hold of in an hour session, okay? This represents, you know, sort of a microcosm of what you might do over a couple of weeks, maybe, if you were given a lot of time to it, or even a couple of months if you were studying to do something in the fall or something like that. So I'm kind of given as a shorthand by coming up with these four categories, right? So I want you to look for examples of it, but beyond that, I want you to think about how these themes show up in different ways. Like, for example, the filling of the temple, right, that we just talked about in 40, was it 34? That's, when we think God's glory, that's one way to think about it. But there's other ways that we see God glorious in this book, right? So you don't want to be too, you know, sort of pigeonholed, right? You want to think about how this theme is seen in different ways in the book. So be thinking about that as you do, and maybe that'll help in your discussions while you're trying to find some of these things. So take 10 minutes and come up with some examples in each of these categories, okay?
Yes, wow.
Okay, we got to pull it together here. So let's hear from you. What are some different ways that you saw these four themes come up throughout the book? We got to go. We got to get some. Got to get some stuff up here. Who's got the first one?
We got Exodus 3. Genesis.
Okay, and
that would we could
which
like,
one?
Do all of them, but so obviously His glory is appearing to Moses.
Okay.
It's holy ground. It's for the purpose. He's moving in because he was pretty absent. He's been on the outside looking in. So now he's trying to move in and make a covenant with his people so that he can live with them. So he starts this whole process with Moses.
Okay. So he reveals himself with his covenant name, etc. So this is all, you're finding all this in chapter 3.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, others.
Kind of chapters 4 through 12 with the plagues, the Passover, that can fall under God's glory being revealed.
Okay, give me a little bit more specific. What do you mean by His glory
through
being
the
revealed?
Plagues, He is.
How is His glory being like? Be a little bit more specific. How is His glory being revealed in that?
Power.
Okay, all right. So, the Lord's might seen in the plagues. And you want to be thinking through this, like, how does he get glory through the plagues? Like, what's going on there? Like, how is his might being underscored? You want to think through how each of these is kind of coming to pass. So right away now, just in three examples, we're seeing glory in kind of some different ways, right? And we want to be thinking about this. And here's the reason that you want to think about this. Just as the melodic line, once we lay a hold of it, is going to show itself in different ways throughout the book, so are the individual notes that we're looking at right now. They're going to show up in different ways. So if glory is part of our melodic line, for example, right, glory's not going to look the same in every passage because the cellos are going to be playing in chapter 40, and the clarinets are going to be playing in chapter 3 like that, okay? All right, what are some other examples? You said plagues and something else. Okay, tell me what you mean there.
Maybe that would fall under holiness. I don't know.
Okay, so think about that. Maybe we'll come back around. Another example?
Just what you're saying, we want to think like the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 9, we would realize that he's hardening Pharaoh's heart so that his power might be known to the nations.
Okay, great. So making his name known. That's the point you're trying to underscore, right?
That's what Paul underscores.
Yeah, right. But do we see that concept in Exodus? His name being known, so that they may know I am the Lord. So even in Exodus, we get it, right? So that's a great pickup, right? Paul sort of zooms us in, right? And that's absolutely glory we're looking at there, right? That's good. Other examples. Let's move to the other categories. Yeah.
I'm just going to say for glory, Exodus 33, when Moses wants to see the glory
of the Lord. Oh, of course, yeah. Moses asks. That's great. Thanks for that. Another categories now, just quickly. Yep.
Holiness of the people, so the otherness of the people in the plagues, starting in flies.
Okay, so God making distinctions, right? That's great. In the plagues. Yes, sir.
Chapter 19, you see the holiness of God, they're staying back from his presence, and also the holiness of the people, there'd be a holy nation, and they consecrate themselves.
Yep, great. So you've got you've got holy nation, you've got the warnings about don't come too close, you've got all this consecration going on. And by the way, this is exactly what my whiteboard looks like when I'm doing this. It's a mess. Yep. Okay? So that's good. Let's move to covenant and dwelling worship. Who has some ideas there? Yep.
For dwelling worship, a few. One in chapter 15, we see the Song of Moses, where the people are singing and worshiping God. Brought out of Egypt.
Yep.
and another one.
So a worshipful song, yes. Right, about what's just happened. Good, keep going.
And then in 25 and 26, but 25 specifically is the contributions for the sanctuary, for the tabernacle, the ark. And
yep.
In the first few verses, the Lord says, and Moses speaks to people of Israel, that they take from me a contribution from every man whose heart moves him. You shall receive the contribution for me. And then they...
And why is that important? How does that fit dwelling and worship? I know it's right there, but just say it plain.
Yeah, a worshipful act, giving, sacrificing.
And so that the thing gets built,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah, right. Just the practicality of it, right? In the back, yeah. Okay. See, so that's a great example of a note flipped on its head, right? So maybe that comes to us in, you know, dun, 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 kind of a, you know, thing. You know, see, I'm not trying to make light of chapter 32. That's not my point. I'm just trying to say that the music comes in a different, you know, a different tone, right? You got one in the back?
At the end of chapter 2, you have the whole connection that goes all the way through back to the Abrahamic covenant. The Exodus is organically connected to God's promises to Abraham.
Okay, so tell me specifically in 2, can you give me a, what are you referring to? Give me a verse or
so,
something.
24, so God heard their groaning and God remembered
yes, thanks.
Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Yep, remembering the covenant, good.
Then we get the genealogy in chapter 6.
Okay. How does genealogy connect?
Well, it literally connects by blood to the original covenant keeper.
Good, good. Steve?
Just think about how Jesus thinks about it. He thinks about those Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob being living, right? And that's how he's reflecting back on this as he's talking to the Pharisees. So it's this covenant with these people eternally, not just the people in that moment, but before.
That's good. Okay, we'll have to stop there just for time. But I hope you're appreciating. Yes, sir.
I have a question about this whole thing here.
Yep.
Your glory, holiness, covenant, dwelling, and worship.
Yep.
Obviously, we didn't do all the hours that we
right.
did.
Yep.
But how did you?
Great question. So essentially, I just started working through the book and taking notes. And again, I had a whiteboard that looks like, you know, a dictionary threw up on it or something. Okay. And I got it's all in black, and I got circles in blue with arrows. Oh, these two go together and whatever, and just doing that kind of work, you know. And kind of settling on these four. You might not come to those exact same four. You might come with three or five, or you might phrase these different or something like that. But this is the kind of work that we're doing. This is the strategy. So great question. Thanks for that. So now, again, what we want to be thinking about here is we've done top and tail. We've done macro structure. Now we've done these repeated themes showing up in these different ways, right? So we've got glory and holiness and covenant and worship and dwelling with your examples in mind, right? So now we've got all of these sort of notes that have come together, and now, again, there's no way to do this in an hour, but I want you to just take, like, I'm going to give you 3 minutes with your partner, come up with a provisional melodic line. Now, hear me, this is a provisional melodic line. It's a working melodic line. Okay? So you want to do this work, and even if you feel ill-equipped to do it at the front end as you're working through a book, you want to come up, you want to start with something. Do this work, come up with a provisional line, knowing that as I study, as I get really deep into the book and get into these texts, I might find that I've got maybe a category wrong. Or I don't have the relationship of these notes quite right. We're going to work on that. So there's no like right, wrong answer here. So take 3 minutes with your partner and come up with a working melodic line just based on the work that we've done. Again, you're trying to come up with a short sentence that essentially tells us what Exodus is about. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, that's going to have to do it. Let's hear from you. Who's got the crystallized melodic line of Exodus for us? Who wants to give us a shot? What brave soul. Yes, sir, Tommy.
A holy God glorifies himself by saving a suffering people into sanctified service.
Oh! Glorifies himself. Keep going.
By saving a suffering people into sanctified service.
Did you say any suffering people?
Yeah. Okay. So, nice, thorough, right? Want to keep working on this? Who wants to share theirs so we can kind of lay them next to each other? Yeah.
God rescues his covenant people by revealing his glory and holiness so that they may dwell with him.
Okay, I didn't get it all, but I got most of it. Okay, those are pretty long. We want to work on, you know, shortening them and maybe grouping them. And even using the popcorn idea, right, from what you'd see in an actual sermon for a text, even at this point, right? Yeah.
God rescues his people for his glory and their worship and obedience.
For his glory... What was the rest of it?
And their worship and obedience.
Okay. So I hope what you're appreciating is we're starting to see some overlap here, right? Anybody have something that's just different or shorter or anything that has a, you know, variation on theme?
Yeah, so I couldn't figure out how to include all that. I just said journey from slavery to glory.
Journey from slavery to glory. Okay? I find it helpful to make it a sentence. So I think that's interesting. I'd want to play around with that and see if I could put that into a, you know, formal clause, you know, independent clause. But that's good. So this is the kind of work that we're going to do. We're not going to, you know, there's not going to be, we're not going to walk out of here with, like, this is it. But this is the work that you do, right? And these are good places to start. Now start studying Exodus. And it's a provisional melodic line. It's a working melodic line. So, you know, you might get into about chapter 5 and 6, and you're like, hey, you know, I don't know, the sanctified service. I'm not sure that's exactly what I was trying to grab. I just use that as an example. But you want to be working with this and tweaking it. Okay, so this tool helps us to not go off the reservation and preach a text as if it did not fall within the confines of the author's purpose in writing the book. In other words, this melodic line needs to be recognizable. Now, we don't preach the melodic line in a particular text. So this isn't the theme of every sermon in Exodus. This is sort of the safety net. This is the music in the background, so that if you've got this discordant note in your text, in your sermon, you're like, wait, that doesn't seem to fit within the confines of that melodic line. It sort of helps you, like I said, keep you on the rails. So my sermon, Exodus 5, do you see the melodic line as at all helpful in terms of whether or not I was... I'm not looking for somebody to say attaboy. I'm trying to just think through this. So did you feel like I was in the weeds, you know, based on these working melodic lines? Do you feel like I was in line at some point? Did you see some of these notes show themselves? Just talk to me. The mission's hard. It's supposed to be. That was where we're at, right? Exodus 5.
Well, the journey from slavery to glory was also hard. So with that note.
Okay. Good. Other thoughts?
Yeah, I thought when you drew out the
the fact that there's meaning to the suffering, I thought that really does provide connection to the glory aspect of the book.
Okay, that's great, right? Did everybody hear that? So the meaning to the suffering, right? You're saying that has something to do with the glory of God, right? That's good. That's good. One other, and then we'll have to move. Any other thoughts? If there isn't, that's fine. But this is how the melodic line functions, right? I'm going to save that. Okay. So the more you know the book through the tool of melodic line, the more it will help you understand the text you're studying. Right? It helps us to see this book sort of as a whole, so we know what we're doing along the way. Okay. So, my final gift to you. Right? There's our little picture. Just as every song has a unique melody, every book of the Bible has a unique message.